All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a Mailbag Monday. We'll be answering your listener questions as well as talking about Deion Jones's trade value. But the big topic of the day is whether or not the Falcons are a well-coached football team. We'll look at the evidence that may or may not support that from last year, as well as some of the reasons why someone like myself can be optimistic that we'll see a better result on the field this year.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here as part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And we thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. Today's episode of Locked On Falcons is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline is where the game starts. So guys, you know Locked On Falcons can be found Monday through Friday, free and available on a variety of podcast platforms, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, whatever you want, as well as on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel, and you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So today's episode is a Monday mailbag. We got a couple of great listener questions, including talking a little bit more about DMP's and his coaching scheme, Deion Jones's trade value, you know, Marcus Mariota, whether or not he'll survive, you know, the week two game against Aaron Donald. So a lot of great listener questions on a variety of subjects. We'll get to that towards the end of today's episode. But the beginning of today's episode, we're going to be talking about the idea of the Falcons and whether or not they're a well-coached football team. And, you know, that's part of it for me, why I'm not as optimistic about this coaching staff and this team going into the season as a lot of other people. Because I think the pervasive narrative for a lot of folks is, well, you know, this team is well coached because the Falcons had no business winning seven games given how bad their roster was. And, you know, the thing that we do on this podcast that's relatively unique is we ask, okay, then why did the Falcons win seven games? Is it simply because they're a well coached football team, or is there something a little deeper? And I don't think you have to dig too deep to kind of look at it. And you just kind of look at the, you know, quarterbacks of the opposing teams that the Falcons beat last year, or you can, you know, go beyond just the seven wins and look at the other two games where the Falcons lost the game by, you know, less than a score. And, you know, those were the Washington game and the first Carolina game, and look at the quarterbacks on those teams. And you look at those nine opposing quarterbacks in those nine games, the Falcons that were decided by one score or less, where the Falcons were most competitive. You see Daniel Jones, Taylor Heineke, Zach Wilson, Tua Tagovailoa, Sam Darnold, Trevor Siemian, Trevor Lawrence, Cam Newton, and Tim Boyle. Meanwhile, you know, the Falcons have Matt Ryan on the opposite side of the field, and you're sitting there thinking against those quarterbacks, given how those guys played last season, you feel like the Falcons have a significant advantage over the quarterback, you know, and at the quarterback situation compared to those teams. And if you don't have a significant advantage with Matt Ryan, then there's certainly a problem. And that manifested itself last year where the Falcons did get the significant high edge in terms of quarterback play. You look at Matt Ryan's adjusted net yards per attempt, or ANYA, in those nine games, it was 7.47. You compare that to the opposing quarterbacks in those games, it was 5.96. And for the sake of comparison, Aaron Rodgers' career ANYA is 7.46. Andy Dalton's is 5.93. So essentially, in those games, the Falcons are getting Aaron Rodgers level play from their quarterback, and the opposing team is getting Andy Dalton level play for their quarterback. So of course, you would feel like the Falcons should definitely go 7-2 in those games, given those matchups. Now, you look at the other eight games the Falcons played last year. Look at Matt Ryan's combined ANYA. In those eight games, it was 4.22. And the closest comparison I could find for a player with that low of an ANYA career-wise was Blaine Gabbert with a 4.34. Now, you look at the eight quarterbacks the Falcons were facing on in those eight games where they weren't competitive. It was Jalen Hurts, Tom Brady, Dak Prescott, Mac Jones, Jimmy Garoppolo, Josh Allen, Taysom Hill. Now, all of those guys aren't elite quarterbacks, but for the most part, those guys were solid to good quarterbacks in terms of their passing efficiency when measured by ANYA last year. for the most part. And collectively in those games opposing the Falcons, they had a collective Anya of 7.93. And again, you don't see that many guys having that high of an Anya over the course of the career. The closest one being is Patrick Mahomes with an 8.09. So again, you're getting Blaine Gabbert on your side of the field if you're the Falcons in those games versus Patrick Mahomes on the opposite side of the field. So obviously you're not expecting to be particularly competitive in those games. And this is kind of similar conversation that we were having after the 2019 season on this podcast, where a lot of folks were high on the Falcons defensive turnaround that we saw in the second half of that season and believing that, you know, Raheem Morris was going to fix it and all the Falcons defensive woes are going to go away because of how great a job coaching that Raheem Morris did in the second half of the season. And Raheem Morris did do a good job coaching that game in those, you know, 8 games where the Falcons went 6-2. But one of the things that we discussed on this podcast that you didn't hear discussed very often elsewhere among Falcon fans was how much of their defensive turnaround was owed to the fact that they were playing some lesser quarterbacks. Shout out to you, Kyle Allen. Shout out to you, Gardner Minshew, in the second half of the season. Shout out to you, Jameis Winston, for throwing multiple interceptions in multiple games. And, you know, I was a little less gung-ho on the idea that, you know, Raheem Morris is just going to wave his magic wand and fix the problem. Now, to Raheem Morris's credit, in that 2020 season, following that 2019 turnaround, according to Football Outsiders DVOA metric, that 2020 defense was the best defense the Falcons have had since 2012, right? That was, at least based off of DVOA, roughly a league average defense in 2020. So Raheem Morris did do a better job than his predecessors, but it wasn't as if the Falcons suddenly were going to have this top 10 defense solely due to the coaching that year. And, you know, when that applies to this year's Falcon team going into this 2022 season, I look at the schedule and I don't see that many bad quarterbacks that the Falcons are going to have the opportunity to feast on like they did, at least I'm alleging, a year ago, right? If you look at sort of our Mendoza line for competent quarterback play, the league average last year in terms of Anya was like 6.05. And notably, basically, when you look at the starting quarterbacks that the Falcons struggled against last year, Mac Jones was 17th in the NFL with an Anya of 6.2. So right above that league average number. Matt Ryan's Anya last year was 5.9. So right below that. And then Tua was, I think, you know, 19th ranked quarterback right behind Matt Ryan. And so the Falcons won that. So that's kind of our Mendoza line for, you know, if the Falcons face an above average passing quarterback, they struggled. When they faced a below average quarterback, they were effective. Now, we'll see sort of which quarterbacks match up on this. And the other factor is, you know, we're also kind of assuming that we're going to get comparable, you know, quarterback play from the combination of Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder. Obviously, that will be something that we'll probably unpack a little bit deeper as the summer goes on, sort of what the realistic expectation for that is going to be. But for now, we'll just assume that we're getting, you know, roughly league average quarterback play. And when you look at the quarterbacks on this year's schedule that are above that sort of Mendoza line, you got Joe Burrow, Tom Brady, Justin Herbert, Kyler Murray, Jameis Winston, Matt Stafford. Below that mark is Lamar Jackson, Justin Fields, Sam Darnold. Now, there's a number of teams and quarterbacks that we can't really quite project quite yet. Cleveland, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, because you have guys getting new quarterbacks, Wentz in Washington, and Wentz last year in Indianapolis was above that Mendoza line, so to speak, but his career average is roughly around that mark, so we'll see where he falls in with Washington. Brissett, Trubisky, Drew Lock, based off of their career averages, or Geno Smith as well, who might be the starter for Seattle this year, could, you know, based off of their career averages are below that number, but we'll see what they do in their respective new environments. Obviously, Trey Lance is an unknown. Jimmy Garoppolo was well above that mark last year, based off of the two starts that Trey Lance had in terms of his Anya, he was above Jimmy Garoppolo in that. So, you know, we'll see how Trey Lance does in his first year as a full-time starter, but at least so far the initial signs are promising that he'll be above that mark. So you're not really looking at a ton of games. You know, you might be looking at like 7 or 8 games, really, realistically, maybe even less, where you're getting below average quarterback play. And then you, again, goes back to whether or not do you feel particularly strongly that we're going to get significantly better quarterback play out of Marcus Mariota in some of those games than, say, what you would expect out of Drew Lock or Geno Smith or what you would expect out of Mitchell Trubisky. Is it kind of a wash in that regard? So that's going to be interesting to pay attention to. And then you look at you know, if it is a wash, that's where you start paying a little bit closer attention to the supporting cast. And you look at, for example, teams like Cleveland and Seattle, right? You know, we know that they're probably not going to have a high level quarterback play with Jacoby Brissett for Cleveland and Drew Lock or Geno Smith for Seattle, but those teams can also lean heavily on their ground attack. Cleveland was number one last year in rushing DVOA. Seattle was number six. The Falcons were 31st. Right now, I do expect the Falcons to improve that mark, but I don't know if they're going to be able to lean on their running game quite to make up whatever differences they have, deficiencies they have in the passing game, like you would assume Cleveland and Seattle will be able to do. And so we'll see how the Falcons match up. You know, that the week four stretch with Seattle and Cleveland is considered one of the more winnable stretches we have in the first half of the season. So it'll be interesting to sort of see how it all plays out. But I sit here, you know, as the natural skeptic that I am, or as some people would put it, the hater that I am, you know, I sit here and I go, if you just sort of accept it at face value that this team is a well-coached team, I think I would, you know, I think there's reasons to not be as gung-ho about that. And long story short, I think is what I will say is I think this season will kind of go much further to telling us how well-coached this football team is, because essentially, as I would term it, Tim Boyle's not walking through that door, that you're just going to basically be able to get a layup type of win. No offense to the Lions or whatever the case may be, because they made us work for it. But like, you know, I don't think you're going to have that benefit this year like you had last year with some really soft opponents, you know, a year ago. So we'll sort of have to see how that all plays out, but we'll continue the conversation talking about one aspect of the team that I am a little bit more optimistic that we'll see significant improvement for, and that's the defensive side of the ball. Although there's still something that's a little lacking, and we'll get into that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons episode. But before we get there, guys, I do want to plug the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast feed, where you get three different shows: A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanisha Padis, covering not only Atlanta sports, but national headline making sports. And the Locked On Sports Atlanta YouTube page is also the place where you can get your 15-minute Atlanta Braves postcast, getting your rapid reaction to whatever the Braves did on that given day. And of course, you can find that by subscribing to Locked On Sports Atlanta on YouTube or your preferred podcast platform. And guys, I also want to tell you about BetOnline, the number one source for all your sports betting needs and info. Whether you're looking for podcasts, the latest odds, contests, or player props, you name it all, BetOnline has it all. And whether you're looking to bet on the Atlanta Braves or the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, UFC, golf, hockey, horse racing, esports, your favorite Vegas casino games, you can find it all at betonline.net. So head to the website today. Use your mobile device to sign up to learn more about the trends in action. And of course, if you're not necessarily into all these other sports to get into action, you still got football that you can bet on. You got USFL games. You got upcoming win totals with the Falcons. You got, you know, Marcus Mariota being the comeback player of the year and quieting skeptics like me. You can find all of those at betonline.net. BetOnline, where the game starts. So one of the things that I think about when I think about whether or not this team was well coached, you know, I think about the offense versus the defense, right? I feel like, personally, I have a lot less concerns with the coaching on the defensive side of the ball than I do with the coaching on the offensive side of the ball. I feel like Dean Pease did probably a little bit more with less than Arthur Smith did. We'll circle back to that a little bit. But you look at sort of particularly down the stretch for the defense in 2021, where they were able to successfully create turnovers. And I think that was a big reason why their defense started to look better in the second half of the season. You look at the final eight games, they were able to intercept a pass in six out of those eight games for a combined, I believe, eight interceptions. And, you know, that's big improvement for the first nine games of the season, where they only had interceptions in two of those games, and a combined three interceptions against the Jets and the Dolphins. And we know turnovers tend to be a little more luck-driven than necessarily other factors when it comes to football. But I do think, particularly in the second half of the season, you could give the defense a lot more credit for making those plays than necessarily, oh, it was a bad throw or it was just a lucky break or whatever the case may be. I think a lot of it was defensive players making plays, whether that was making a read on the play, whether that was guys putting pressure on the quarterback and causing him to make a bad decision, or, you know, passes off of deflections and all that various stuff. So that was instances where I feel like the Falcons were able to make their own luck. That in conjunction with what I felt watching the film were less breakdowns in terms of the mental errors, where it felt like, oh, well, you know, early in the season, it seemed like there was a lot of times where there was like a wide open, like 20 or 30 yard gain to be had for the opposing team. And for whatever reason, the quarterback didn't see it. And there were a lot of big plays left on the field. And I never really noticed that as much as frequently in the second half of the season. So it felt like players were getting more comfortable within the scheme. And so that goes to why I sit here and I go like, you know, I felt like there wasn't that much meat left on the bone when it came to the defensive side of the ball by the time we got to the second half of the season, where it still felt a lot of ways that the offense still had a lot of ways to improve. And so when we're having that debate between talent and coaching, you know, when it came to the defensive side of the ball, it was very clear to me that the Falcons lacked talent on that side of the ball, where it didn't feel as clear with the offense, given some of the playmakers that you had on that side of the ball. Again, I know we didn't have the best offense, and no one's going to sit here and argue we had the most talented offense, but it felt like you had enough good players and enough spots on offense to get a little bit more production, a little bit more stability on that side of the ball than we were getting on the defensive side of the ball. And that's why it felt like to me, I wouldn't say that the defense overachieved, but it achieved, right? You know, it felt like the offense underachieved. And I looked at, you know, these offseason moves, and it does feel like the defense has made much more significant strides this offseason with the moves that they've made than the offense has, relatively speaking. You know, you look at the areas that were problematic for the team last year, pass rush being one of the more prominent ones with the league's worst, you know, pass rush. You add someone like Arnold Ebiketie, you get better in the secondary, bring in Casey Hayward, you bring back Isaiah Oliver. And, you know, I look at particularly those moves in the secondary, I feel like that's going to make you better in the red zone, because where, you know, Fabian Moreau, the much maligned Fabian Moreau, who we, you know, myself was a vocal defender of on this podcast last year, but where, you know, he was most lacking to me was in the red zone. Right. And I feel like adding a player like Casey Hayward is going to do a little bit better job in the red zone. So you do maybe a little less breaking and a little bit more bending when it comes to this style of defense that Dean Pease wants to have, because of the additions of Ebiketie, because you replaced Dante Fowler with Lorenzo Carter. You feel like that's at least, you know, a lateral move, and you're hoping Grady Jarrett has a better season. You know, there's reasons to be optimistic that, you know, you'll be doing a better job getting pressure with four guys when Dean Pease chooses to rush those guys. You know, I think we did a breakdown of, you know, the best case scenario for this pass rush a week ago. And we talked about how the top three pass rushers for the Falcons a year ago in Fowler, Steven Means, and Grady Jarrett, I think combined for roughly like 7 sacks and like 77 maybe pressures last year. And then you look at sort of, you know, projections for guys like Ebiketie, Carter, and Jarrett in that regard. And, you know, I'm sitting here at least somewhat optimistic that we can, you know, get 15 sacks, maybe 120 pressures. So you're close to doubling your production out of your top three guys. And I think in that episode, you know, I think I listed like the best case scenario for those three guys is maybe like 28 sacks and 180 pressures or something like that. Again, I don't think that's particularly realistic, but like, you know, that's sort of the spectrum that we're talking about. And that gets us to the point where I feel like the Falcons made gains on defense, there's still one spot that's missing. And that's one of the things we talked about in that episode when talking about the pass rush, is who's going to be the fourth guy when you're rushing four. And, you know, that goes back to a previous concern I expressed earlier in today's episode about, you know, your ability to stop the run against teams like Cleveland and Seattle. And I feel like that's the one area of the Falcons defense that they haven't really made significant gains, right? Their run defense was very bad last year, right? You know, every week on the rapid reactions, I would grade the passing offense, the rushing offense, the passing defense, rush defense, and the special teams. And the run defense was by far the lowest graded unit of the team. They had by far the most D's and F's grades handed out last year. They gave 720 rushing yards in the final four games combined, right? You know, we looked at, you know, oh, they created three interceptions against Josh Allen, right? They picked off Josh Allen three times, but Devin Singletary, Zach Moss, and Josh Allen combined for 230 rushing yards in that game. So it didn't, you know, matter all that much, right? The Saints and Alvin Kamara in that week 18 game put up almost 200 yards, 195 yards rushing against us. And, you know, I think that was one of the reasons why the Falcons' red zone defense wasn't as effective, because they were really struggling to stop the run last year. And to me, it's not a coincidence when you look back over the last decade and look at, like, basically the only time the Falcons had a competent red zone defense, you know, since like 2012 was in 2017 when they had Dontari Poe and a guy that could plug the run. And so, like, that's part of me where I sit here and I go, like, there's got to be another signing on the horizon. There's got to be another defensive lineman that the Falcons are going to sign that can be that fourth guy in that four-man rotation that can also beef up this run defense, because I can't imagine the Falcons are sitting here feeling great about their run defense now that they've added Vincent Taylor and Rashawn Evans and Nick Kwiatkowski and feel like they have solved those problems, right? You know, it's one thing to sit here and be optimistic about the youth you have, you know, with guys like Taquan Graham and Marlon Davidson, which is fine, you know, and we compare that to, say, being optimistic about the safety position, where the Falcons didn't necessarily make massive upgrades at that spot because they feel reasonably confident with Richie Grant and Jalen Hawkins. But when you look at what Richie Grant and Jalen Hawkins were able to put on the field last year, like, you get the reasons why the team is hopeful and optimistic that those guys can make a big jump. With what Taquan Graham and Marlon Davidson put on the field last year, and again, not to sit here and say they were terrible or anything like that, but there's no reason for the Falcons, there's no justification for the Falcons to feel like, oh, one of those guys is poised to make the jump as a starter, right? Like, you could at least reasonably make that claim with Richie Grant and Jalen Hawkins, right? And then at least then you still have two proven veterans and Dean Marlowe and Eric Harris as your sort of emergency options. You don't really have that unless you're counting like Vincent Taylor and Anthony Rush as those options. So I look at it and I go, like, okay, whether it's Akeem Hicks or Eddie Goldman or Larry Ogunjobi, Star Lotulelei or Linville Joseph or Brandon Williams or whatever the case may be, at some point, one of these the Falcons have to sign another defensive lineman, right? Right. There's no way that they think this current unit is good enough. And so that's why you hear me say things like, oh, like, they're kind of tanking, because it's like, you know, like, they have to make a move at some point. Right. You know, otherwise, I'm just going to sit here and be like, they must be secretly tanking or whatever the case may be. So we'll see what happens next week when June 1st happens and see if the Falcons make a move. We'll see what happens if maybe they're waiting to the eve of training camp to make some of these additions like they did last year. So we'll just sort of have to see, but like, I can't sit here and imagine that the Falcons are like, yep, we solved all our defensive problems. Like, okay, you made strides in the secondary, you made strides at linebacker, you made strides at the pass rush. What about the run defense? And so we'll see what the Falcons can do there, but that will end the conversation in terms of, you know, talking about this Falcon being a well-coached team. And we got a couple of mailbag questions to answer, including one, you know, speaking of Dean Pease and what he's done on defense. We got one on whether or not we're going to see more of AJ Terrell's shadowing opposing teams' number one wide receivers this year. We'll get into that as we continue today's episode. But before we get there, let me plug the Locked On Sports Today podcast. I know you guys are constantly impressing your friends with your football knowledge, or at least your Falcons knowledge, by just basically taking the things I say on Locked On Falcons and repeating them. And like, oh yeah, Carl is really smart about his Falcons knowledge. But, you know, you're not impressing your friends nearly as much because you're not listening to Locked On Sports Today, free and available on the same podcast platforms you can find Locked On Falcons. And Locked On Sports Today has you covered for all of sports news, not just football, but, you know, basketball, horse racing, college sports, all that and more. Get the latest headlines with the same, you know, care and expertise that you find on Locked On Falcons, with the other Locked On hosts joining hosts Peter Bukowski on Locked On Sports Today. And guys, I want to tell you that today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With ever increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why wait while a person behind the counter orders parts on their computer when you already have access to rockauto.com at home or in your pocket? So save time and money when using Rock Auto and instead of spending up to twice as much for the same parts from a car dealership or chain store. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years with reliably low prices for every customer. They have everything you need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Just go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And when you do, write "Locked On" in the "How did you hear about us" box so that they know we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So our first question comes from James Long at James Long GSU on Twitter. Yes. Is last season, you talked about how AJ Terrell was mostly kept on one side of the field instead of shadowing a true number one wide receiver, barring games like Buffalo game, shadowing Diggs. With this graphic that Pro Football Focus put out about all the high end number one wide receivers that Atlanta faces this year, do you think it's likely that we will see Terrell in more of those number one shadowing coverage assignments in 2022? Or do you think DMPs has enough faith in Casey Hayward to keep with assigning each side of the field? So I've long been a person that believed that DMPs wants to play a lot more zone. He's going to be a little bit more conservative than a lot of fans think. And the offseason moves that the Falcons have made this offseason only, you know, confirm those suspicions, at least in my eyes, with you signing a guy like Casey Hayward, who's long been a very successful zone corner. But this notion that the Falcons wanted to be a man-heavy defense, I've always been skeptical of. And, you know, if you wanted to be that, why sign a guy that's basically spent all but, you know, like 10 to 15% of his snaps over the last 5 years playing zone coverage in Casey Hayward? So I think we'll continue to see AJ Terrell parked on one side of the field and Casey Hayward parked on the opposite side of the field. And, you know, I think DMPs is flexible enough that if there's a specific matchup where the Falcons feel comfortable playing a lot more man coverage and having that number one guy be shadowed, I think he has that in his back pocket, but I don't think that's going to be the plan. So maybe outside of one or two games where that specific matchup makes the most sense, I don't think we're going to see AJ Terrell shadowing opposing teams' number one wide receivers. At Dirty Bird Digest on Twitter asks, what are the chances Marcus Mariota makes it out of the Jalen Mayfield versus Aaron Donald matchup in week two? Is Donald going to break Adrian Claiborne's single game sack record? So yeah, man, that's going to be tough, right? But going back and doing a little bit more research on Marcus Mariota's injury history, at least in recent years, a lot more of it has been sort of like soft tissue injuries, you know, than necessarily wear and tear injuries. Certainly when you look at the Raiders stuff, obviously those last year or plus in Tennessee, it was a lot more wear and tear type of injuries. And so that Rams game certainly is probably going to put a lot more wear and tear on him, thanks to Aaron Donald. But I think Leonard Floyd's kind of the guy that you have to be most worried about, because when you go back to that 2019 game where the Falcons played the Rams, Dante Fowler had three sacks in that game, while Aaron Donald had one sack in that game. And of course, we know that's the Aaron Donald effect, where basically he's getting double teamed every single snap and everybody else is getting single teamed. And that led to Dante Fowler cooking Caleb McGarry in that game. You know, you look at Fowler, you look at Samson Ebukam and Okoronkwo, the other outside linebackers that they had there. Those guys combined for 12 pressures in that game. And those came against McGarry, those came against Jake Matthews as well. Now, that being said, you do expect problems for Jalen Mayfield. That 2019 Rams game was the second lowest graded game that James Carpenter had during his time in Atlanta. So Jalen Mayfield certainly is going to have his work cut out for him, but you know, it will help the Falcons if Jake Matthews can lock down his side and Caleb McGarry or Jermaine Ifedi, whoever winds up being the right tackle, can lock down their side with those single teams. And then basically you can just worry about Jalen Mayfield, which, you know, is a lot of worry when he's going to be Aaron Donald, but like that's much more feasible than, hey, we're double teaming Aaron Donald every snap, he's still cooking us, but no one else is, right? That changes the landscape of those game plans. Corey Charon at Buffalo Head One on Twitter asks, regardless of their ultimate success on the field, which former Falcons player do you think Ebiketie's size and skills most resembles? It's hard to find a specific comp for Ebiketie. You know, I compared him on the recent scouting report to like John Abraham. I think they're built a little bit different. And Abraham was kind of an elite speed rusher in that regard. He certainly had other elements to his game, but primarily relied on his sort of speed to win against most tackles he faced. So with that in mind, I don't expect Ebiketie to be that type of player in terms of his speed rush. We'll see. So it's hard to find a comp for him, but like Brooks Reed probably the closest, just because he's a guy that won primarily with technique, with that spin move that he adopted from Dwight Freeney in 2017 and 2018. But I do think Ebiketie is better than Reed. So he's somewhere on the spectrum between, you know, John Abraham and Brooks Reed. He's somewhere in there. Wyatt Hastings on YouTube asks, what type of role will Michael Walker have this year? Well, a lot of it depends on what happens with Deion Jones. But I expect Walker to be in the mix should the Falcons move on from Deion Jones this year. But I would expect if they do move on from Deion Jones, Nick Kwiatkowski will be, you know, sort of the expected starter there. I imagine the Falcons will probably still try to use Michael Walker in the same role that they used him primarily last year, if that's the case. And he's the backup, which is he comes in on the field in nickel situations when the Falcons would run their like 3-3-5 nickel. And have three linebackers on the field and only three defensive linemen. And in those roles, he was primarily asked to play coverage, although it'll be interesting to sort of see with Troy Anderson, who also seems like a guy that could fit that role, if, you know, he'll sort of push him for that this season. But I kind of expect Michael Walker to have a similar role as sort of a sub-package player this year primarily than necessarily a true blue starter. Another YouTube comment comes from House Snipes. He asks, how realistic is a Deion Jones trade? I've done some research and the team that is in the market for a veteran linebacker is the Washington Commanders. Could the Falcons trade Deion Jones for Daron Payne or Jamin Davis? Daron Payne seems to be out the door after this year from reports I have seen, or Jamin Davis, which I have seen reports since he didn't have a great rookie season and doesn't fit their 4-2-5 scheme. Maybe Davis and a late round pick for Deion Jones. Do you think either scenario is possible, or do you think the Falcons may cut Deion Jones post-June for scheme fit and salary cap reasons? So I would be surprised if Washington traded either one of those guys for Deion Jones. I don't think you're wrong in the sense that I think Washington is looking for potential upgrades at that middle linebacker spot. Currently, it is Cole Holcomb penciled in to be their Mike linebacker with Davis as their Will linebacker. Davis is their top pick from 2021. So I am very skeptical that they would give up on him after one, you know, down rookie season. And I don't think Deion Jones really fits what Washington typically looks for in terms of middle linebacker. So while I think most people would say, oh yeah, Deion Jones is definitely better than Cole Holcomb, I think they're looking for a guy that's more kind of the quarterback of their defense at that Mike linebacker spot. And while we know Deion Jones has experience calling defenses from his time here in Atlanta, you know, being that sort of leader type that you're sort of expecting was not something that he was particularly known for doing. So I don't know if Deion Jones is really what they're looking for. I've also seen the reports that, you know, Washington is not expected to retain Daron Payne after this season when he hits free agency. I've seen reports that say they're open to other teams offering something for him. They did draft Fedarian Mathis in round two. There have been rumors, you know, for a while now that if they do decide to move on from Daron Payne, they probably have Star Latulele on speed dial so that he can rejoin Ron Rivera in Washington. But that being said, I don't expect them to give away Daron Payne for free, right? I think Washington's a team that expects to make the playoffs this year. And so they're, you know, if you're going to make it worth their while to give up, you know, one of their starting nose tackle and a former first round pick, even if they don't necessarily have him in their long-term plans, you're going to have to make it worth their while in that regard. So when it comes to trade partners with Deion Jones, I don't think Washington really fits the bill. You know, I'm looking at teams that not only can afford him, which considerably narrows down the list right now, because there's really only about 10 teams in the league that, you know, have enough cap space to be able to absorb Deion Jones' contract. Now, obviously, teams can make additional roster moves to create cap space to absorb his contract, but you're already sort of limited to those 10 teams. And when you look at those 10 teams, not many of them have significant linebacker needs. Now, a couple that stand out are Cleveland, Chicago, Denver. The Chargers are another team. But, you know, they just picked up Troy Reader before the draft, so I don't think they're necessarily in the market. You know, for me, all along, when we going back to February, when I've sort of pictured a Deion Jones trade, it's one of those things where my expectation was that the team that would trade for Deion Jones is a team that is already very familiar with him, with a coaching staff that already is very familiar with him, which kind of limits the list to basically the Cowboys and the Jets. And the Cowboys have enough space to trade for Deion Jones, but it doesn't seem like they need a linebacker unless their plan is to make Micah Parsons a full-time pass rusher this year. But they have Leighton Van Der Esch. They have LeJabril Cox, who they took in the fourth round last year. And I think they picked up somebody else as well. And so you look at the Jets, you know, they don't have a good linebacker core, right? It's basically CJ Mosley and Quincy Williams. You know, they don't have the cap space, though, unless they sort of trade CJ Mosley, or they trade Carl Lawson, or they trade Corey Davis. Those are the three most tradable assets. And I've heard, you know, other people sort of speculate that all three of those guys may be playing their final years with the Jets this season. And they may be looking to dump those contracts, but it doesn't seem likely that they're going to be likely looking to dump Lawson or Corey Davis before training camp, like you would expect in like a player for player trade with Deion Jones, maybe CJ Mosley in that regard. So we know CJ Mosley has a history with, you know, Dean Pees. We know Corey Davis has a history with Arthur Smith. And, you know, Carl Lawson has a history of being, you know, Bay here on Locked On Falcons, at least last offseason, in terms of upgrading his pass rush. But yeah, like, unless it's a straight up CJ Mosley for Deion Jones player for player swap, it doesn't make a ton of sense there. So this is why I've been skeptical of the idea of the Falcons trading Deion Jones. Now, I say that, and then, you know, we're 10 days away from the Falcons moving him to, I don't know, the Dolphins or somebody, you know, something like that. And they're just like, oh, I didn't see that coming. But, we'll just sort of have to see how it all goes. But I've been skeptical because it just doesn't seem like the market is there. You know, I've been speculating for, you know, since March of last year that the Falcons have quietly, you know, done the same thing with Deron. Washington's done with Deron Payne, which is like, if you want him, come get him. And I think the Falcons have done that with Deion Jones, and they haven't got any takers at this point in time. So it is possible that they could just cut him and eat the, you know, $18 million in dead money and just, you know, move on from him, you know, post June 1st. At that point in time, but I don't think that's ideal at this point in time. And I just think you kind of like, you know, like if I don't think it's come to that, right? Like, I just kind of feel like just keep him a year and then see what happens at the trade deadline. You know, like, I think just outright cutting him at this point in time is just kind of a waste of time. And then, you know, that brings up a whole different conversation about what the team was doing in March when they I don't know, but like, we'll let that go for now. And that's where we'll leave it, guys. Appreciate you for tuning in for another Monday mailbag episode. Tomorrow's episode, we will be joined by Mark Schofield to talk about Desmond Ridder. And then I believe on Wednesday, we will be doing our Troy Andersen scouting report. I got like one more game I want to watch of Troy Andersen, and then I'll be able to finalize my thoughts on him. So that's the plan early in the week. And then we'll probably have some guests on later in the week. But if you want to submit your questions for possible future Q&As, you can do so via Twitter or Facebook at Locked On Falcons. You can send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can always leave a comment here on the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel and do what Hal and Wyatt did. And, you know, indicate that their questions were specific for the mailbag episodes. That makes it a little bit easier for me to know what is just simply, hey, I have a question based off of, you know, something outrageous you said in a podcast that I'm commenting on versus, oh, I actually want this question answered on a future episode. So by all means, just say, you know, for the mailbag or something like that in your YouTube comment. And that's how I will know. So guys, I appreciate it again. Hope you had a great weekend. We got another great week of content here on Locked On Falcons. And, you know, always thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. Recommend Locked On Sports Atlanta as your second listen, Locked On Sports Today as your second listen. Of course, if you want to get the skinny on all the things going on around the rest of the league, check out Locked On NFL. Get the latest on Jadeveon Clowney and his move back to Cleveland this year by checking out Locked On NFL podcast, free and available on all the same podcast platforms that you can find Locked On Falcon. Appreciate it, guys. Till then.